Hey guys, welcome to episode 244 of the podcast with my wonderful boy of summer, Zeke Nicholson. I have had the honor and the pleasure of becoming his chum. God, I love that word. While shooting the last couple of seasons of Cameron Esposito and Rhea Butcher's wonderful show, Take My Wife. And he's just such a talented actor and improviser and writer. And if you don't know him yet, I believe you will. But you probably have already seen him in a bunch of stuff. So please enjoy this episode. Shout out wise, I just wanted to throw one thing out there, which is that Christopher Royce, who runs my Twitter account and works with some other comedians and is a San Francisco guy who is just fantastic, has written a little Star Wars something. And I would encourage you to check it out. He's at, you can see it at ChristopherRoyce.com/Redux. Christopher Royce, that's pretty self-explanatory, right? ChristopherRoyce.com/Redux, R-E-D-U-X. So if you like Star Wars, you might want to check it out. Okay, guys, sending love from Atlanta. Bye.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Like start talking super slow and sultry.
Yes, exactly.
Just let's just have a morning right
let's
now.
Get
let's just
into
have
it.
A wonderful morning. You do have a very good voice for morning radio.
Yeah.
Very soothing. Do you?
I don't know. Do I?
I guess. I think you might.
Yeah.
Do you like the sound of your own voice? I know I'm asking that. I've never asked anyone that in a real way, and I really sincerely am asking.
Yeah. I don't feel one way or the other. I know some people I can't listen to myself on answering machines or anything like that.
Yeah.
And I don't particularly care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You didn't grow up. I feel like that's something that people either, I feel like the natural order of things is everyone hates the sound of their own voice.
Yeah.
Now that I'm thinking about it, does that serve some sort of genetic purpose? Because why would that be such a thing that everyone feels?
I don't know.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Here's my scientific guess. If that were the case,
it's, you know, this podcast is all nothing but scientific
perfect,
guesses.
Great.
Scientific guesses.
It would be that if you heard somebody that had a similar voice to yours, that they would be genetically similar. And
yeah.
So from a genetic diversity
I love
reproduction
everything about it. But
yep.
Here's what's interesting about that. Let me get back to you with my own science.
Please.
It's not even a guess. It's just a so far afield. But here's the thing. But don't you think that's interesting that I feel like we sort of have these two competing. This is hilarious. I really am making. I think I know where you're going with this.
And
do
I have had
you?
Almost. Are you
okay,
going? Can I guess?
Yes.
Are you going with why is it that people are attracted to people
yes!
that look like them? Yes.
Yes.
I truly have had exactly this thought.
There's such a weird contradiction.
I'm so
excited
you.
That you
yeah.
totally guessed it. Right? Because if the idea is that you should be disgusted by
right.
something that's going to perpetuate and not be Darwinian
yes.
or whatever, where you sort of adapt and develop, but then God forbid I, you know, be attracted to someone with dark skin.
Yeah. Psychology
so is
versus biology, right?
Exactly.
Narcissism.
Nature versus nurture.
Yeah.
Community fear. We fear the thing that isn't like us.
Yeah.
And somehow that overrides
right.
a genetic predisposition to be no, actually.
We need to.
Because even on the
yeah.
most. And this is such a gross statement, but let's all just own it. On the most surface level,
yeah,
mixed race children are the cutest children in
we
the world.
We are. What can we, you know? Yeah, it's true.
I wish I could point to myself.
Yeah.
My parents were both blonde hair and blue eyed.
Yeah.
But my mom's first husband, Hispanic. I like to think if they had just popped one out.
Yeah.
I could have been Juanita.
You could have had that. You could exactly.
Yeah.
That could have been you.
I could have been Jorge Perez Ponce's daughter.
Right. Wow. That's quite a name.
Yeah. He was this will mean something to people who listen to the podcast. It will mean nothing to you. But let me just put it in context. My mom is Mormon and she's brilliant, but totally insular now. She did some traveling and stuff, but
yeah.
It's definitely one of those moms where you hear about their adventures and in a very cliche TV way, you're nah.
Right.
You
yeah.
did? that's not you now. Like, didn't own a TV forever when I was a kid. Doesn't drink, doesn't smoke, went to church. Like, this idea of her being married to this guy who was like, had his own, I mean, they weren't rich, but like somehow he had his own plane and like just a little tiny crop dustery kind of plane, but like he would take her out and fly around and stuff, is just, it was inconceivable to me that that was the same person that, you know, would like only listen to Prairie Home Companion. All due respect to Prairie Home Companion.
Such a hilariously universal like sentiment that I think so many children have had about their parents.
Yeah.
I remember I spent a summer living with my uncle when I was in college and hearing him speak specifically about when my mom first went to college, and my uncle's like a couple years younger than her, and he went to go visit, and my mom was like, this was at IU in the, it would have had to been like early 70s.
Yeah. Wait, what's mid-70s. IU? Indiana?
Indiana University. Okay. Yeah.
Good guess, Jamie.
Well done.
Thank you. Cause I could have said like Iowa.
Yeah. Yep. That's true. Okay. And I remember he told me specifically a story about my mom, like at some party, and then like everyone at the party, like streaking out of there through a cornfield. And I was like, I'm sorry, my mother, the college professor. So
what does your mom teach?
She teaches Spanish and Latin American literature at Bard College.
Isn't that funny? Because my mom taught French. She was a French professor at the U of A.
And then
became a
University of Arizona?
Yeah.
I was born in Tucson. Did we talk?
We did
very briefly
touched it because I was like, oh, you have so many positive memories. And you're like, I moved when I was less than one.
Yes.
Yeah.
U of A. Did you live in Tucson for a time?
I lived in Tucson through high school and then I needed to get out of there. And I love Tucson, but I couldn't imagine going back in that way. I like to visit very much now. Yeah. But
most of my family still lives in Phoenix. I haven't been to Tucson in quite some time, but Phoenix is, you know, really near and dear to my heart.
Is it?
It's like LA without any of the cool shit.
It really is.
Like, it looks the same. It's really flat.
I know. And Tucson's very snobby about it.
Yeah.
I've talked about this recently. Somehow another Arizona thing came up. But yeah, it really is like,
Yeah.
Like, there's only, like, if I had to move back to Arizona, that would be at the bottom of the list. I feel like I would move to, like, Green Valley with a bunch of retirees before I would move to Phoenix somehow.
I'd go to Sedona and just
Slide
Rock all day every day.
It might be Flagstaff might be at the top
Flagstaff,
for me too.
Yeah. Get a little snow in there.
And so yeah, exactly. Well, that's, I went to NAU for a couple of years. I wish I had like a little cabin getaway there. Mm-hmm. I think that'd be really fun. Yeah. So you have spent a fair amount of time in Arizona.
Yeah. Yeah. Since. My grandparents lived there growing up. And then two of my aunts and cousins lived out there as well. So we would go usually every summer and then also for Christmas.
And what took when your parents had you, what took them from right after you were born out of Tucson?
Yeah. So my parents so I was born in Tucson and then my parents split sort of shortly after I was born. And then
siblings?
I have half siblings.
Gotcha.
But grew up lonely only.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, so my mom moved to, we lived in Austin, Texas for 5 years.
Nice.
Where my mom was studying at UT. Mm-hmm. And then,
University of Texas? That'd be really sad.
No, yes.
no, University of Tallahassee. They have a chapter in Austin.
Right, Tallahassee.
So fuck you.
Yep. And then after that, she got the job at Bard, and so we moved to New York.
Gotcha.
And I was there until I went to Williams College in Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm, East Coast,
yeah. And then I came here.
So you stayed with your mom and your dad did not. Where did your dad end up?
My dad is here. So this is a very lengthy story. I'll give you the quick spark notes.
Give me some hot goss.
It's that hot goss. But basically, I didn't see my dad at all I saw him for 1 hour when I was 7 and then basically didn't see him for those 17 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was 17, he and I reconnected. And when I moved to LA after college, I ended up living with him for like 6 weeks. So, it was an interesting thing where it was like nature versus nurture, it was just interesting, like, kind of developing a relationship with him when I was already almost an adult.
Yeah.
And seeing like some of the ways in which we were similar, but that were purely genetic.
Yeah.
He just like hadn't, you know.
Do you mind if I ask what precipitated that? I mean, why it was like that you just didn't have contact with him? Was it a really bad breakup?
I think like he just was, Yeah, he was kind of in a spot where their relationship sort of like just didn't continue or wasn't really able to. And I think like, I don't exactly know all the particulars of it, but my mom got full custody. And then, yeah, he just like sort of was not as much in the picture. And part of it is that like he has, I've grew up one of an only child, but I'm actually one of eight in real life. And so I've had these sort of half siblings that...
In various, like older and younger than
you? Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah. One's older and then the rest are younger, actually. Two are older and the rest are younger. Part of it, when I moved to LA, I was also not only moving in with him, but with children that were 3, 5, and 7 at the time. And that was
crazy.
Like,
what a huge shift.
It was a weird, and already like after college, like that's such a crazy time anyway, where you're just like, what? This happened. I got on a plane with 4 suitcases, like nowhere to live, really. Yeah. Was like, I want to go to Los Angeles. So like it was jarring. And then going from like living in a dorm with my friends to living in a small house with small children.
God. Yeah. Getting to know people who are actually related to you and that you don't. Yeah. Building those relationships.
Yeah. And I didn't have a car at the time and I had an internship in West Hollywood. So I was like busing from the West Side to go to this like internship at this like small production company in West Hollywood. It was a weird time. Yeah.
Did you have that moment? Because I've had not too many times, maybe that I can count on one hand or less, that I've really have done such a 180 in my life that I have kind of had that like stepping away experience where I've been like, I fully feel like I just took over someone else's life. Like, I don't know who was here before me, but I stepped into something so specific and so different from what I was doing that it's almost anxiety inducing because it does feel like, what?
Yeah.
What is going on?
That's funny. That's an interesting way to describe it of like taking somebody else's life. And I don't know that I've conceived of it in that way necessarily, but like what will happen to me now is that I'll drive by like that block in West Hollywood where I'm like, oh man, this is like so deeply reminiscent of this particular time and like thinking about like who I was and like what was going on at that time.
Totally.
And,
like, well, because like that's the other idea, right? Is that our brains really make these intense memories when they have to, because we are really getting sciencey.
Love
but you know
it.
They have to because it's like this is the genetic way that your brain survives or what have you, or that you can understand or adapt to change quickly.
Totally.
So I'm sure you have like this visceral memory because so much was new all at once, like new city, new job, new family, like new house, everything was new. So I'm sure it really like got in there and embedded, you know, in a really intense way.
I have a question for you, and I don't know if this is just me and my, I wonder if this is like a facet of strange narcissism, but I remember specifically on my first couple of days in LA being like having the thought that like people were looking at me because they could tell that I didn't fit in here, or that like I was like dressed differently in a way that would attract their attention.
Yeah.
Which is so insane if you've lived here for more than a week.
Yeah. Like, well, a couple things. Number one, what I will say about that is that before I stopped, I have like a weird thing now where, and I don't know if this is a defense mechanism to uncomfortable, eye contact with like frankly men and feeling like I would rather not have those kinds of encounters
on
where I feel like I'm being blown kisses and
right.
All due respect to the gentlemen who culturally maybe have been raised to believe that that's flattering, it makes me angry.
Sure.
So I think I just like kind of I think it also might have just been a direct response to the fact that I do feel that people really look at each other in LA, particularly in certain pockets, because there is this sort of like, who's this?
Right.
So I didn't feel that way here the way I did like going to New York for the first couple of times. Mm-hmm. And I didn't feel that people were looking at me, but I felt like somehow it was so obvious that I wasn't. I didn't know what I was doing, and New York felt very like insular, like, I think we all know what we're doing here. Who are
right.
you?
Yeah.
But in LA, I think that it is the sort of like, cause when people come down here for the first time, I do feel like people are like, Jesus Christ, everyone is constantly looking at you. Like, should I know who that is?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's not as bad in certain places, but so I wonder if it could have even just been that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
You know, like, where do I put this person in my hierarchy of whether he's
for sure
famous or not?
Although I feel like I was like walking around like near the Beverly Center, just like on the street.
That, like, I don't know, the Beverly Center, you know, that's still right near Beverly Hills.
That's true. Hot celeb haunt.
Yeah. And it worse, it might actually be where tourists think they've gone off the beaten path. Like, yeah, Beverly Center, that's where the, that's where famous people shop. It's not like, yes, we're going to the Hard Rock Cafe, but it, we could also just like glance and see Shannon Doherty doing a little shopping.
Yeah. She,
you know,
she's a regular.
So maybe
over there.
That was it.
Yeah.
What are, do you feel like you have things in common with those younger siblings too? Like the same way you recognize things about your dad that were familiar, or is that a more like a further removed from
that's interesting.
Kind of aha.
Yeah, I think that's like a little further removed. And it's a little bit hard to tell also just because they're children. And so it's like their personalities are still developing a little bit.
Right.
And like, I think that really was part of the specific things of like, oh, these, the thing that I found specifically in my dad that was similar to me was he, the sort of way that he engages with people is very, there's a sort of like particular rhythm to the way that he speaks that was very similar to me, even though he's, he sounds like a cartoon character and he says the most insane stuff of all time. Yeah.
What is cartoonish about him?
Yeah. So the day that I, am I allowed to curse on this podcast?
Oh, heck yes.
Great.
And so then the, I just didn't curse to make you feel uncomfortable.
Heck yes.
Fucking shit ass. Yes.
The day that I moved to California, he said to me, he's like, son, welcome to California. California is great. As long as you don't fuck kids or hurt animals, you can do whatever you want. You could eat shit and howl at the moon and somebody will probably join you.
Oh, my God.
So I would say don't talk like that. But
I wonder if that's like a line he gives to people.
Definitely.
Like
I think so.
It,
like that. But the funny thing about him is that he's the funniest person of all time. And my mother, God bless her, not
so
a funny bone in her body.
So I can tell by the voice that your dad is white and your
yes,
mom is black.
My dad is very white. Speaks very offensively. But he's extremely funny, which is interesting because I sort of like, I like to think that I'm sort of funny and inherited some of that from him, all of that from him. But he has these sort of like lines that he delivers as if he has just thought of them and they are the first time that they've ever been said. And I remember saying some of them to my mom and her being like, he used to say that when we were married back in the day.
He's a stand-up comedian.
He totally
that's
is.
The definition
yeah.
of a stand-up.
Yeah.
It's like, that's so funny.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he's just got lines for days. He loves to say, like, man, that motherfucker's so full of shit, his eyeballs are brown, which is, like, a classic thing
it's
that
classic.
I had never heard.
Yeah.
And so he was just like, yeah, I truly thought that he had invented that. I was like, oh, that's so funny. but, yeah, he's a wild character.
And did your mom ever remarry, or did she have kids, or did she?
Basically, she's kind of common law married at this point. She... her partner, they've been together for almost 10 years. So,
nice.
Yes. And he's also a professor at Bard College.
So you really come from intellectual.
Just that academic,
at least, yeah.
You know? Yeah. Which
did you feel like that was, did you have a natural appreciation, if any, for that? Or did you feel like you, pushed back against that? Or
I think, I always enjoyed, I don't know that I always enjoyed learning, but I was one of those kids that was like always pretty smart, but had a lot of organizational issues would struggle with, I think this is typical of a lot of creative-y type people, but like I just, my backpack was a disaster. Uh-huh. I would lose my homework all the time. And I really struggled with like daily math homework, like anything where I had to be sort of like regimented about staying up on top of things. And so as a result, like when I went to Williams, which is like a liberal arts school, and it was, yeah, it's just like that college schedule of like you have the most you're ever going to have one class is like 3 days a week, unless you're doing some sort of intensive thing. And that was like so much better for me.
Yes.
Like, 2 or 3 days a week, like papers every other week. Like that was perfect for me. And so my grades were better in college than they were in high school.
Although God, I also feel like, but what about the experience of that? Because for me, I think I I did have that experience of like, holy shit, no one is going to get me up out of bed. And
yeah.
No one is going to make me go to these classes.
Yeah.
And I only have this once a week, and I three times a week or twice a week or whatever. And something about that, I think, was also that, I mean, that's dangerous to a lot of college students
totally.
Too. And it definitely was dangerous to me. Like anything I had that was early in the morning, good luck. It was such a struggle.
Wow.
Such
yeah.
a struggle.
And maybe this does come from being in an academic family. Like the guilt is really built into me if I skip class or anything like that.
Even it should to this be. Day. Both my parents are educators.
Yeah.
But I was like finding ways to ditch school at the school that
really?
My dad taught.
Oh, wow.
What an asshole.
Was this at NAU?
No, he was a high school teacher. So
oh,
I went
got
to
it,
his
got
high
it,
school.
It.
He was my senior honors teacher
got
in
it.
English. Yeah.
That's fun.
But like math was just anything like that that felt
hard.
Like. It just didn't feel, I mean, it's so, I don't remember feeling, I wish I could have articulated this then, because it seems like a no-brainer, like, oh, of course I should have been able to articulate this. But anything to me that didn't feel like it had something to do with your emotions.
Yeah.
I think I just was like, even science I could get on board for, which is like, oh, discovery, interesting, or like, you know, but just... I just couldn't. It was so cold to me and so pointless.
Very cold.
And I've said this so many times, but like, I can't get on board for something where you can come up with an answer and it be wrong and it's numbers. Somehow in my mind, it's like, you should just stop. Like, it should stop. You're going in the wrong way. So suddenly there is no solution.
Right.
Not like, we can come to a solution. It will be a number.
It's
it will just be
the
wrong
right
number.
One. Yeah, that's interesting.
I couldn't, I just hated that. I was so angry at that.
Yeah, I was similar. Like, I really did have an affinity for science, but very much on the spectrum of like biology, but not physics and chem, because those are so
math-based. Definitely didn't do any, did not go to physics. Like, did as little down that road as I possibly could get away with.
Yeah. But bio and earth science were, I did quite like both of those.
Because we were playing the characters of scientists when we were in class.
Right. Yes, exactly. I was not at all an actor. Like,
oh,
I
No.
I was
what
in.
Were you, what excited you when you were in high school?
I like, was an athlete. I played basketball and ran track. And I did karate.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. I did karate for 13 years from
nice.
Like age 5 to 18.
Oh, that's great. It really builds a sense of confidence and inner peace.
It does.
No,
and
I
you know what I think?
Know.
Like,
that's true.
I was just having this conversation on a podcast the other day.
That's the only place that matters to talk.
It's true. and somebody made the connection when I was sort of talking about karate in a way that I hadn't thought about it, which was that like I am a very sort of like self-confident person, and I think a lot of that was just built in from doing karate and
it
like
really worked
being
it's
disciplined
a, that,
as a child.
That's even true.
Yeah,
that's very cool.
And I think like work ethic too is like, despite it's for things that I'm really interested in, I work really hard at, and things like math is just like, oh fuck, I can't I couldn't possibly do this today. But
and did you, speaking of your guilt, because here's the next piece of that that I would say is that I definitely tried, but I think that at a certain point, once I tried and failed, if there was an opportunity to, it's, I feel like I don't want this to be true. I feel like they can come back and take away my diploma, but I want to say like 75% of the math I did was me really making an effort, and I wouldn't cheat on tests, but I for sure would cheat on homework. Like it just felt so meaningless.
So
it's like I had one of my best friends was great at math and she didn't care.
Yeah.
So it was like, oh,
so
can I just
much.
Copy? Like,
I
this
think
is
that's the nasty little secret that even smart, good kids cheat all the time.
Rather than like, where's the guilt come? Like, was I more insecure about getting a bad grade? Obviously, because it was more important to me to cheat than it was to be honest.
Right. Exactly.
In terms of where the guilt lies. You know what I mean?
Identical to that.
Okay.
Yes.
Good.
And here's the thing, I've circled around now, but I think too, like, and I stand by this, both in high school and college, I was just like, there was a real hierarchy of like time well spent in my mind. And to me, like spending time doing things that I loved and like hanging out with friends was always going to be better than just bullshit homework time.
Yeah.
And I look back on that now and I still think that that's true. You know, I have such fond memories of like, doing weird McDonald's runs at like 3 a.m. in college during finals time way more than any paper I ever wrote, you know?
Right.
Yeah. But what was I talking about before that?
Karate?
Karate, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, karate?
Karate, yeah. Anyway, I don't know.
Do you feel like you held on to anything karate related that is more actual representation of like the physical part of it?
I know, sadly. When I went to college, I had just been doing it for so long that I really needed a break. Yeah. And it's a hard thing to do on your own. And it's not unlike church. It's very like specific to your like sort of location based experience is really important. Yeah. And so like you'll hear people talk all the time. It's like, yeah, I went to church growing up, but then like I can't find a church that mirrors that experience now. Yeah. And I felt that way about karate too. I was like, I don't want to go try and find another shittier version of this.
Yeah.
And also I was in a small town, Massachusetts, where there was no options for that.
Right.
And I just didn't fancy trying to like continue training on my own to then go to class, you know, whenever I could back home. Like that was just too much for me.
Yeah. That's understandable.
And I was kind of just ready for a fresh start.
Did you do sports stuff in college?
I did. I was on the track team. I was captain of the track team.
Nice.
Yep.
What does that mean in terms of your responsibilities to the team?
Well, I wasn't, basically you're sort of like a bit of a player coach. Like you have to kind of run the, younger athletes kind of through practices mm-hmm. when the coach is not present, and I don't know, like organize events. It's nothing too crazy, but it's a bit of an empty title, but you get a lot of respect from those.
Opposed if you had to file their tax returns.
Yeah, nothing like that. Title. And there was like four of us too, so I was more of like an emotional leader, and the administrative duties I certainly left to my more capable compatriots. But yeah, I was like a very serious track athlete, and my junior year of college, I was like, I gotta do something besides sports and homework. And so I decided to join the improv team, and here we are. It really stuck. Yeah.
So initially, it was almost, am I hearing you right, that it was almost more a response to, I should be doing something that isn't this, rather than like I feel called to this other thing.
Yes,
really
absolutely. It was that this
great.
Seems
I
kind of fun.
Like
let me try this.
Yeah.
And then once I got into it, it was like really stuck with me. But I've thought about this a lot too. Like it's pretty crazy that my life has now been sort of built around this one thing that I A, picked up on a whim, and B, was fine at, but didn't, it wasn't like, this is the thing that I've been missing for my whole life.
Right.
And I was like, I would say I was the eighth funniest person on my college improv team.
Like, how many people were there?
There were
like eight.
Yeah, 10 of us. Like, yeah, I just like it. But after graduation, I was just like, I think I want to do this forever. So
that's something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's the thing where, and these guys know, like when I see people that I went to high school with or people find me on Facebook or whatever, they're so unsurprised at what I do. And like a lot of people know that I just didn't do anything like this at all for 10 years.
Yeah.
From like, you know, whether I was in denial or what, but, it like, I always felt like, it kind of made me sad that people were like, I knew you would end up on TV or whatever.
Yeah.
Because I was like, wait, what about my struggle of like, I don't think this is for me and I don't want to do this and I'm going to be this whole other person.
Mm-hmm.
And is that a situation where people that you went to high school would be like, whoa, improv, what? Or would they be like, I always knew that was in you?
No, I think it is one of those things where people are pretty surprised by it, both in college too, which is like even more recent. Like people knew that I did improv, but I was never in any plays. Like that was just not a thing that was on my radar. And I think like I'm also a pretty different so dumb, but like I'm a different person on stage than I am off stage. Like I'm not I'm just like not as on all the time off stage. And so it's I think it's surprising for people to see like, oh, that's what you do now. Like that's like to sort of see that switch get flipped. But at the same time, I think they're like, oh yeah, that is something that I sort of see in you,
mm-hmm.
but that's like not, it's more concentrated and mm-hmm. yeah.
I think that's cool. I mean, that's a nice way to kind of come at it.
Yeah.
Do you have this, I also feel part of my guilt that has remained has been the guilt of being in show business rather than doing something worthwhile, like teaching is sort of like, I'm not saying that's a real thing, but that's the little voice in my head. And both my parents totally supported my choice. Did your parents support yours?
Yeah, my mom did, but I think sort of she was the most extreme version of like, wait, you're doing what? Like, it was just, I didn't find improv until I was 20 or 20. Yeah.
But did you have did she have a story for you in mind based on anything else where it was like, I thought you were going to be a blank?
Yeah. I think she thought that I was going to be an academic of some sort. Or like kind of work in and around a college, either in athletics or in academics. Mm-hmm. And I came close to doing that too. And that was part of it too, was like, it was sort of a last minute, like, hey, senior spring, like, I'm going to go to LA for spring break and then like see what it's like. And she was like, what are you talking about? And then I was just gone. And I think she really struggled against it for a bit. But now it's nice that like it's, she sees my life here and sort of has an understanding of the scope of it. And
yeah.
Because
that's what I thought of when you said that you, I didn't know exactly what you were going to say when you said you first got here and sort of the sense of people around you. And it's funny now for me to look back in that moment, because the first thing that popped into my mind when you started that sentence,
uh-huh.
because I don't like listening, I just like predicting.
Of course, yeah. That makes you a good improviser.
My first thought was like, oh, I wonder if he's going to say that he feels apologetic about what he does. Like, which is so totally just about me. Like,
yeah, that's clearly you projecting that some serious.
Totally, because that's very much like, I still do that where people are like, what do you do? I will not list that I'm an actor first.
Yeah.
Will not do it.
I still have trouble doing that. But the thing is, I like genuinely think it's so cool. And I think my life is much better than most people's lives. here's the thing with me is like I don't feel a ton of guilt necessarily. I do like teaching, and luckily with improv I get to still do that, so I feel like I scratch that itch a little
absolutely.
Bit absolutely. Yeah,
you find ways. I think yeah, same yeah. with me. I sort of find ways to connect to that
totally,
maybe more than I thought I would, but.
Yeah. I don't like, I'm one of those people where whatever it is that people do, I think it's great and worthwhile as long as they're really into it and like really passionate about it. But there are so many people, particularly like ones that I went to college with, where like they're doing careers that they clearly just don't really like that much, and that bums me out so hard. I don't know, like it's I think Williams is an institution that is like pretty well regarded, and as a result like churns out a lot of people that do like either Teach for America or finance type stuff, and like that's great if that's like genuinely what people are about, then that's awesome. But I think it was like pretty common for people to do internships there like between their junior and senior year and sign 2-year contracts for immediately after they got out of school, and so people were going and doing these jobs, and I was just like, y'all are doing that, like hold up. But they're making $80,000 a year out of the gate, whereas I was sleeping on an air mattress for 9 months, like
wonderful.
Really struggling, you know?
Yeah. Do you feel this is going to be such a, I'm already disgusted with how gross this statement
can't
is.
Can't wait.
Do you feel like, how do you respond, or do you hear this? Like in my circles, especially because a lot of my friends are even older than I am, if that's possible. Is the sort of like millennial conversation of like these younger people, they just think they should be able to do whatever they want, which by the way, I'm 100% convinced that like every generation is like that. There's zero difference to me in the way that I would perceive somebody who's younger than me than the way somebody older than me perceived me. I think that's just the rite of passage.
Yeah.
But it's funny that one of the tags that's been thrown onto millennials is this idea of like, oh, you think you should just be able to follow your dreams, follow your bliss. Do you have an idea or an opinion about that one way or the other?
Yes. I have a very strong opinion about this. It's more specifically than like, you should be able to follow your dreams. I like strongly reject, because I get that it's true of a lot of people, but it's so deeply untrue of me. Like, reject this label of millennials being aimless wanderers. Like, that frustrates the fuck out of me. And I can't watch movies like Frances Ha, because it's like she is, or even girls at times where it's just like, no, fuck you. Like, I took a weird career path or whatever, but it's like I was so like singularly focused on making it happen right as soon as I, like out of the gate. And I do see a lot of my peers that are just like still kind of figuring it out or whatever, but it pisses me off so much that that has become a thing of like millennials just sort of float from thing to thing.
I don't know where I need to, I guess I, first of all, I don't care enough to, but I guess if I did care enough to, I would really need to see a little more serious data. I understand that people throw the kind of like living back at home student loan thing, but first of all, that's not their fault. Number one, that is totally has to do with the economy that we created for younger people.
Totally.
But second of all, like, I just don't feel like I see a trend in one direction or another. I don't think, like, whether we decide to focus on that as a thing.
Yeah.
I don't feel like, I certainly know that like my, you know, generation or whatever, I don't feel like everyone just like went off and did their thing.
Yeah.
Like I didn't know what I was doing far less than tons of kids who are out there who are like, anyway, I'm 21. I created this app. I'm making $80,000 a year. Like there's tons of that now. I don't know why it's funny.
I wonder, part of it is like there was this like trend towards art reflecting that aimlessness and that becoming very popular. And so that sort of filled in the, it was like a feedback loop where people were like, oh yeah, that's the kind of thing that generation is creating, that must be true of all of their generation.
And this is before my technical time, but something like Reality Bites, that's still called up as like, or Dazed and Confused, which I guess was set in the past, but isn't that also just about people who don't know what they want and who feel kind of like they should be entitled to something that they're not getting?
Absolutely.
And they don't know who they are?
You're right. Yeah.
I mean,
my theory has been punctured. absolutely. Yeah, it's not a new thing, but it is so, it became so...
It's just a decision that someone decided, like, that's the label that stuck. But then on the reverse of that, I think the positive label that is somehow still a part of that whole soup is like, these kids are going to change the world.
Yeah.
They're dreamers, but they're doing it.
Right.
They're going to change the world,
it
everybody.
Is that, like, they're failing upwards. It's like, my whole generation is like, God damn it, I don't know how they're getting it done. Because they don't know how to work a day in their life.
Are you telling me that in the 60s, people weren't saying that about the kids who were just getting out of school? And in the 70s, people weren't like...
Yeah.
I mean, there might have been one era there where the kids who became... into Reagan, whose parents were like, do whatever you want.
Right.
Maybe the sort of summer of love.
Yeah.
Those kids of those people who were like, whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe those kids. But since then, I just don't feel like there's been this like huge, you know, rumble of like, now everyone's like this.
I'm with you. Yeah.
Did you, I'm totally switching gears here, but so what would you get excited about like reading or watching or, you know, doing for fun with or without your friends when you were in high school?
In high
like
school.
Were there movies that you were like, I had to see every Arnold Schwarzenegger movie?
Sure. I grew up, and this continued through high school, was like a big Mel Brooks fan. Men in Black was a big old movie for me as well.
Sure.
Most Will Smith's movies really stuck with me. What TV shows was I really into? Yeah, some Fresh Prince, obviously. Of course.
I'm not a fool. Of course I love Fresh Prince.
Yeah. I was really into Smallville on the CW.
Oh, okay.
Yep, old Tom Welling.
Yeah, I think I missed the Smallville boat. I feel like Smallville came on when I may not have even had a television in my like hip San Francisco days.
Oh, yeah.
At least for the beginning of it.
What else was even on at that point? I don't know. Like, I liked TV, but it wasn't I don't know that it was like the... I remember coming home from school and like eating a snack, and What I Like About You starring Amanda Bynes was always on TV. And it was one of those things that I just sort of...
It becomes a ritual that you didn't intend on.
Exactly. And I was just like, is this a show that I watch now? I guess it is.
And what about dating?
I didn't really date much in high school at all.
For lack of interest in it, or for like not knowing how to handle pursuing?
Yeah, probably the latter. More lack of, a bit of like awkwardness that was... Yeah, I don't know. I was still sort of like figuring out kind of what my whole deal was. I was a big old like romantically ambiguous friendship type. I was a good rom-com character. Uh-huh. And honestly, still to this day, let's be real.
I think that's another really common high school experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you felt like, oh, I'm always going to be the one who like picks someone, dusts someone off after they...
Yeah, I think that like I was just sort of not quite... I don't know if like confident was the right word, but sort of like not willing enough to put myself out there to sort of go after things that probably would have been right or successful for me. Like one particular relationship I had that was like we were very close friends, and then like it sort of combusted towards the end because she... it was just like it. There was a lot that was unspoken, and then eventually she just sort of like got fed up and started dating somebody else, and I just like lashed out and was so upset. And then,
so was it like you guys were sort of dating, but you were not ever crossing over into
exactly,
like, I guess we're dating,
right? Yeah, it was sort of one of those where, and I don't know. Since then, we've had conversations of just like, that's how it was back then, right? I'm not crazy, and like. That's that like lovely sort of adult like, yes. Like, how naive we were.
And then in college you started to feel a little bit more like...
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's like a little bit easier. I don't know. I don't know what exactly if anything specific changed for me, but...
Did you have that feeling when you're in high school of like, I wish I were a dick? Because some guys, particularly guys that I am friends with, but like a lot of the time here, I don't know if I've ever asked that exact question, but I do that feeling of like, because of what you said about being a friend, like, oh, so am I... Did you feel like that was something you were seeing around you? Like, wait a minute, what...
Yeah.
Do I need to be a meaner person? Like, right. Why is this a thing?
I just remember feeling like there was just sort of just like a formula to it that I just didn't quite understand. I remember specifically people talking about like, all right, like when you're talking to girls, like here's the thing, like you gotta... So if we've got a week, right, you gotta do 2 days where you talk to them, and then just a day in the middle where you just don't talk to them at all.
Oh,
and then like one day back.
And it really is a formula.
It totally was.
And I was like, oh, math, so that's already a problem.
Exactly. You know, I wasn't good at math, so that was not going to happen.
Yeah.
For me,
that really is adorable, because it feels like so much, if not all, of what we have developed into as a species is just trying to feel like we're in control of things.
Yeah.
And so that makes so much sense, totally. Particularly at that age when everything does feel like a mystery somehow.
Yes.
To be like, I think I got this.
Yeah.
Okay. 2 days on, one day off. Like, it's so funny.
For sure. I also like, I was a real tweener when it came to like coolness. I was not uncool by any stretch, but I was not sort of like the upper echelon. And my high school was a little bit weird because it was very small. There was only 400 kids in it. And so it felt like the pools were small, and I was a little bit concerned about status in a way that I think a lot of high school kids are. Mm-hmm. And concerned about sort of like where my status fell in the hierarchy, and as a result, like, I think that affected, just sort of, it didn't feel like, oh, I am the person that, or like, I am cool enough to sort of warrant any success in this regard necessarily, but I'm not so uncool that like all these like nerds are available to me either. No. So I was like, I felt like kind of caught in between, which is funny. I haven't really thought about this.
What were the people who were above you like? What have they sort of figured out in your eyes that you hadn't?
It wasn't sort of like classic John Hughes-y, like, oh, football captain or anything like that. I don't even know. And like, I was friends with all the sort of like attractive, popular girls too, but I just was, I can't really put my finger on like what was missing for me in terms of just being like, I should just be like, hey, I like you. Like, let's do this. I think here's what, part of it is I grew up only child with a single mother for most of my life. And like, that's a particular relationship. And one of the things that we didn't really discuss was like dating or sex or any of that stuff. Like that was kind of off limits, not through any overt conversation, but like it was awkward for me. And I don't know, my mom maybe responded to that awkwardness and didn't want to have that conversation. So part of it was like, I remember being like, feeling weird about dating because I would have to sort of explain that to my mom and have that be a thing. But I do feel like it was like I had extended crushes on many girls right in a row. And then, they either just sort of fizzled out or they would end up in other relationships. And then like the couple times that I did sort of hedge towards having something, it just wasn't quite right. And like, yeah.
Did you go to prom?
I did go to prom, yeah.
I mean, of course. Everyone,
of course,
most
yeah.
Most people do, whether they go with a date or...
I did.
And who did you take?
I had two dates. So I went to junior and senior prom. Both platonic dates. No big deal.
I couldn't be less surprised and charmed.
My first date was this girl, Ashley, who was like one of the hottest girls in the senior class. And her boyfriend was too old to go to prom.
Oh,
so
wonderful.
I got the call up from the minor leagues. And actually, now that I'm thinking about this, same thing happened senior year. My friend Caitlin had a boyfriend that was older and couldn't go. So
that's amazing.
Yeah. Man.
Did you have crushes on either of them? Or was it like a fairly painless...
Ashley was not really. That was a true sort of friend thing. And Caitlin was interesting. Caitlin, if you end up listening to this, you know what it is.
Well, Caitlin, could you come in here,
yeah,
please?
Yeah, can you come in here? We had a funny thing where I moved to this high school in ninth grade. And like right out of the gate, she had a crush on me. But I don't know if I was like interested in somebody else or like whatever was going on. And then literally as soon as she sort of switched gears, I was like, no, wait, I think I like you.
Sure, like, it's a classic.
Yeah. But we developed a pretty strong friendship through the rest of high school. So it was like that felt like an easy, like, yeah.
Yeah.
But the girl that was like that big sort of like big friend thing that was so much more and yet nothing less was also at prom with the dude that I fucking hated so much.
No.
And I remember like our relationship had sort of, we were back on solid enough ground at that point that it was like fine and we were friends. But actually junior prom, I think that was the start of their thing, was that like he just asked her because he just had the gall to do that. And I could never have gotten out of my own way. But yeah. Yeah, real... High school could have been very different for me had I just been a little bit more emotionally honest.
Get in line.
Yeah, that's true.
That's what I say to that.
Yeah.
And what kind of music did you listen to?
I was... in high school, I really was into Outkast quite a bit. Also, yeah, Lupe Fiasco was a big one. Mm-hmm. This is like kind of on the other end of my Weird Al phase, which was like the beginning of my music tastes.
Uh-huh. Weird Al and Mel Brooks. Those Weird Al, the people who knew that you had those passions wouldn't be surprised
that's
that you
true.
Ended up
yes.
in comedy.
Yeah.
But also, like, everyone likes comedy, so why am I even pretending?
No,
like,
it's true, though. And those are two of the greats.
They're two of the greats.
Yeah, Kanye West was a big one, and, like, that was back when he was still fun and not that crazy.
Just crazy enough to be delightful. Yeah,
yep. I went to a couple concerts in New York City because it was only about 2 hours away. That was really fun. I went to the Roots when I was in high school, which was great. Yeah.
And you were where in New York?
We were, so I was in Rhinebeck, New York, which is 2 hours directly north of the city.
Okay.
And there's
but
a Hudson
still,
line
does it
train.
Still feel like you have a lot of like metropolitan access in terms of, some people say like it was a totally different, so different that the city was felt as inaccessible as if they lived in Ohio. And some people are like, oh no, yeah, we would go into the city all the time.
Yeah, it was far, like my town was very small and it was very much a, it wasn't even really suburban, like it was truly pretty rural. But the train was, it was a 2-hour train ride and people would go to the city pretty regularly. And yeah. we had family friends that lived there too. So I would go, yeah, we would go every couple of months and spend a weekend there.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Did you have a desire to live there at any point?
I had a strong desire to not live there, actually. Mm-hmm. And thinking about it, it would have probably been an easier jump for me to just go do improv in New York. Mm-hmm. But, there's something about the speed of New York that I really don't like. It's fine to visit, but I don't know. Maybe it would be different now as an adult, but I think I would certainly have struggled living there. And I always kind of felt, it was like, I'm gonna probably end up in LA anyway. Might as well just do it right away.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's been really valuable to me.
No, absolutely. It's funny because I don't, as you know, I love labeling people.
Sure.
Love it. It's one of my great joys in life.
Don't like listening. Do like
hate
labeling.
Hate to listen, love to label.
Probably a complicated person to do improv with.
I'm sorry. I wasn't listening. What? I wouldn't have thought of you as an East Coaster.
Yeah, I get
which
that a
is
lot.
Like, yeah,
actually.
which is like, what does that even mean?
Yeah,
but you because
I don't
you know?
Walk around going, I'm walking here.
It's as simple as that. Yeah, if you ever want to pass for an East Coaster, that's all you have to do.
Got it. That classic thing that so many New Yorkers
classic.
Say.
And also, like, now that's the entire East Coast of the United States of America. Right. It's not even like, God forbid that be someone in South Carolina says, also East Coast. When people say the East Coast, they are not talking about the South. They are lumping in. But also, like, people from Connecticut and Vermont
that's
don't go.
That's a Bangor main line if I've ever heard
Why
one.
Would you? But it is funny because that really... That's such a, there really is a specific labeling of like West Coast, Middle America. Like people are like nice corn fed, but you seem so Middle America. You're you're Midwestern. You're nice.
Yeah.
And then you jump right over to New York.
Right to New York.
And there's almost nothing.
There's no gray
unless
area.
You have a really strong Northern accent. And then the South, obviously. You seem like you're from the South. But like all of those places where there isn't a really iconic personality just has to get shuffled over to one of those different labels.
It's all about boxes, you know?
And I don't listen to people, so I really can't tell where people are from. I just have to eyeball them, give them up and down, try to figure out what their income is.
Yep.
Those are my priorities.
You were my nightmare when I moved to LA.
I can't imagine. I miss so much because I go, like, I don't make, like, I'm so in my own world that I get teased for missing stuff. Like, I miss all the bad stuff, and I also miss all the quote-unquote good stuff, where, like, my most famous one being I was on a hike. I'm sure I've told this story before, but I was on a hike with my friend Jessica in Bronson, and I was in the middle of talking to her. I was very impassioned. Everything I say is important.
Sure.
So I was telling some sort of story. We're having some sort of emotional discussion. And someone up ahead was stopped and like holding their kid, whatever. And they facing downwards, but at a standstill. And we were hustling up the hill. And I'm talking to her. And like this person is like, hello. Mm-hmm. And I just go, hi. So da 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 da. And then we get up like another 100 feet out of earshot. And she was like, do you know that you just brushed off Tom Cruise? And I was like, what? There was no, that's how, like, there was no, that was a blob of nothing that I couldn't even see. It was fuzz.
You're like, sorry, Tom Cruise,
and
I'm walking here. And then you kept walking.
Yeah. And then we could have joined Scientology that very day.
That could have been your shot.
But that is very classic me, where like, I won't register that. And it is not, it's a total protection or some sort of like I'm too ADD or something. But I definitely, I know I miss out on all of the like, I might have seen you in something.
Yeah.
Like, I really miss out on all of
that. But you were so connected to your friend Jessica, you know? Maybe that's what it was.
I was deeply connected. She is the only person I will listen to.
Yeah.
She often says nice things about me.
Fair enough.
I gotta be present for that.
Can't miss those opportunities.
Gotta be present for that. Otherwise, and you can tell, if someone's talking to me, I start to drift off. And then they say something nice, and I sort of wake up with a smile.
For sure.
Get a little more perky.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. Let's get into this MASH game, my friend.
Let's do it.
All right. My first question, I'm going to get right into leisure time.
Great.
Give me three places. They can be the real world, or they can also be total fiction, like Hogwarts kind of world, that you would have a vacation home if getting there were not an issue.
This is today.
Today.
Today, me in my current
today
form.
Today, you. Yeah. Do you want a mirror?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just going to run to the bathroom and answer this question. Cool. So one thing about me, I'm much more, I like lakes much more than the ocean.
Agreed.
Mountains
more than beaches.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Don't love sand. Sand is like whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So one would be, maybe say Tahoe. I've never been to Tahoe, but
it's
beautiful. The idea of it's great. So that's vacation home number one, right? Let's do Greece will be number two. Mm-hmm. Cause I want to go there as well.
Yeah, I've never been to Greece either.
You've never been? Yeah, it seems beautiful. And there you can get mountains and beaches, whatever you want.
Yeah.
And finally, let's go with, let's do Paris, because why not? Yeah. Went there in high school and it was amazing.
It really is. I think it's deserving. There are people who disagree with me.
Yeah.
Okay, next one is three movies that you can jump into and just hang out with the characters. You're not reliving the plot. You're just like in that world, not with those people.
Got it. And okay, cool. Forgetting Sarah Marshall will be one.
Amazing.
Cause that's just a fantastic film.
By the way, I doubt that these microphones are very good and I doubt that they're picking up any of the sound, but I want to really apologize. There is so much, it's like we're living inside a giant's mouth and they're having they're at the dentist.
Yeah.
It is incredibly loud.
It's a real hardship.
It's a real hardship. Yeah. This has been very hard for you and painful, and yes, I appreciate it.
No problem.
Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
I'm soldiering on.
Yeah,
I'm
really
shouldering
are.
On.
You're shouldering a lot of responsibility in this podcast, yes, having to give these answers.
Very true. Let's do Angels in the Outfield. That was my favorite movie as a child.
I've never seen Angels in the Outfield.
It's a perfect film. Joseph Gordon-Levitt at age like 8.
Sure.
Danny Glover, Tony Danza. I mean, Christopher Lloyd. It's a real all-star cast.
I do like those group movies where you're like, and then this person, and this person, and then this.
Yeah, it's great. And then let's go with let's do Spaceballs, Blazing Saddles combo. One of those two.
Okay, all right. I'm gonna allow it.
Yeah.
I'm going to allow it. In that vein, thinking about Mel Brooks, three people, living or dead, that would be awesome to just have as like a mentor / buddy that you could call up and see and hang out with and just have a great time.
Will Smith, hard number one.
Great.
Hard number one.
With a bullet.
Yep.
Great. Is he someone that you feel confident you would be happy to meet, or is he someone that's like, don't meet your heroes just in case?
He might be a don't meet your heroes.
I just don't know. I don't know one way or the other. I feel like I've heard both.
Yeah.
Which probably means he's great. Like, you know what I mean? The people that you consistently hear bad things about are probably true.
Right. I mean, I could be more specific and say like Will Smith in 1991. Like
91. Got it. No, this is your time. I love it. 91. Perfect.
Because he's just like, he's one of those people that has been famous for so long that you wonder if standard human interaction
totally
beyond
anymore,
him at this point. Will, if you're listening, I'm so sorry.
Oh, Will.
Come hang out with me anytime you need. gosh, this is more difficult than I would have thought it was.
Yeah.
Living or dead. Tim Duncan, basketball player. Of course. He's number two. He might even be number one if we're being real.
But look, this is a random game, so who knows? You might end up with number three.
Who might
end up being number one in your mind?
Who knows? And then let's go with I don't know. Let's go with Hermione Granger for the third one.
Oh, great, great.
Why not?
That's great. Okay. Grange.
I was a Harry Potter child.
I can't call myself a Harry Potter child, but I still am fully on board.
Sure.
Fully on board.
You can call yourself that if you want.
I'm a Harry Potter child.
There it is.
I'm a Harry.
You deserve it.
Potter child. okay. Next one is three skills that you wake up with tomorrow. You sort of downloaded Matrix style. And they're not super like superhero skills, but just like full on real skills that it might take a while to master if you really jumped in.
Got it. So not moving things with my mind, but
not
rather.
Yet.
Got it. Cool. I would love to be like really, really annoyingly good at basketball, because it would be, I am pretty good, but like it'd be fun to be able to just destroy everyone in YMCA.
Sure.
Because, you know, make myself feel good about myself.
That's right.
I would love to know how to edit.
Yeah.
That's like an interesting thing that I will never, ever learn.
I think it is the most undervalued job in Hollywood, perhaps.
I think it feels kind of like mathy to me. And I think I was just like, no, it's
just the level of patience.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so in awe of.
Yeah. Oh, this is a good, I would love to like some combination of just be like really musically inclined. Great. Whether it's like producing music or being able to play the piano.
Great.
Got it. Yeah.
Okay, next one is...
Can I change editing to close-up magic?
Yes, you may. Okay, great. Okay, so this one is different from the mentor thing. This is actually like you can switch bodies for a day and live as someone else for a day and just kind of feel it, see what that's like.
Yeah. That's fun. I would maybe do LeBron James, because that would be fun. Somebody like, it'd be funny to be like a really, like Denzel, like a really respected dramatic actor. And then, let's get a little bit more outside the box here. I feel like my answers are a little cookie cutter. I apologize.
I'm very okay with your answers.
Thank you. It would be cool to switch bodies for a day with, who's a person that has like a really high-end travel blog?
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Like an Anthony Bourdain.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. Somebody who travels around and eats weird stuff. Yeah, let's go with Anthony Bourdain. Let's Why not?
I noticed that you don't want to have female genitalia.
Oh my gosh. Hermione Granger.
Do you want me to switch out from the third one?
No, it's fine. Okay. You're right. Gosh, that was sexist of me. I'm sorry.
No, it wasn't. But when you said thing outside the box, I was like, oh, I wonder if he's going to go.
Oh. No.
It's really okay. It's really okay.
Okay.
Okay, but let's talk about the ladies. This is your alternate universe sexy times.
Great.
Or your wife, however you want to think of it. And
Perfect.
It can be a fictitious character or real people from any time and place.
Cool. Number one that's jumping out to me, this is not in any order, is Eva Green's character in Penny Dreadful.
Oh my god, I love her so much.
Just her in general. She is amazing.
I love her.
She's the best. Who are other people that I feel like I've been in love with on television recently? That should happen all the time, right? If they're doing their job right. this is my math deficiencies are really
what you're experiencing is very common.
Forcing me to list.
And I think improvisers are even harder on themselves because they're like, I'm supposed to be able to come up with all these answers right off the cuff.
That's true. Can you tell me a couple of yours to help me spark?
Yeah. I mean, I can go straight down the list of women too, that I just think are fantastic. I love Cate Blanchett. I love
She's
Eva
great.
Green. That was a great list person on the list. Who else am I just like, you're so yummy. I mean, I wish Emma Thompson were my alternate universe wife. Who else do I love? Trying to think of other Eva Green types, which is like not really
she's
a thing.
So
she's
unique
so unique
that I honestly, this should be so easy for me.
Who did you have crushes on when you were younger? Did you have like, please don't say Amanda Bynes. Well, you know what, you can.
No, that would be sad. I mean, like all people, I had a crush on Beyonce in my childhood, but she's like, she's transitioned now where everybody is just all about her. And right. I'm too cool to follow that.
Yeah, you gotta let it go. Understand.
I'll just go with the two folks that I've been really enjoying on television of late. Both of whom you will get. that you have or will have experienced. Both of them, Tatiana Maslany.
Oh,
what a treat!
God, absolutely,
she's
great
just
choice.
A dream. And also Aya Cash.
Oh yeah,
also great.
Great. They're both absolutely terrific.
Yeah.
People as well. Great. Okay. Cool. Next one is three like alternate universe careers, like just the fun stuff. You don't have to worry about the slog of whatever it would be.
Totally. So my number one hard answer for this: own a bookstore in Portland.
Great. So easy to picture, right?
It's, yep.
It becomes immediately like, oh yeah, that life, like the whole life that comes with that. I got
yes.
it.
Yes. An assistant track coach.
Okay. Great. Don't want to be coach. Want to be assistant.
That's right. And finally, some sort of like visual artist, like mass, like sort of canvas painter. You don't have to write all this down, but specifically like somebody that would make this kind of pillow, like mm-hmm, this. Mm-hmm. This is more pop party, but like mm-hmm. I really like bright patterns and colors mm-hmm. that are simple and aesthetically pleasing.
So I'll just put visual
color painter.
Putting color painter. Done and done. Okay, and then the third one is three foods or drinks, something that you take into your body that in this world is not great for you, whether you have an allergy or it's high in calories or it's a drug, that in this alternate universe it's actually good for you.
Ooh,
and you can
it.
Have it at the snap of your fingers in perpetuity.
Nice. Cheesecake.
Great.
French fries.
Yeah.
You know,
that's the lowest my voice got on the podcast.
Yeah, that was your morning sultry voice. And finally, let's go with just like barbecue mm-hmm. in whatever mm-hmm. form that may take.
Understood and appreciated. Okay, and then I'm just gonna do this little short thing that tells me which like eeny meeny to do.
Great.
So just tell me when to stop.
Oh, nope, not yet. Not yet. Now.
Okay, great. I'm going to pause this, do the minimal non-math
perfect.
Of calculating that this takes. I'll be back great. With your 100% guaranteed MASH future.
Thank God.
I have your results. I have your test
I'm
results.
I'm so nervous.
Prognosis. Success.
Oh.
I feel real good about this.
Great.
Where do I want to start? First of all, I want to congratulate you on that charming bookstore you own in Portland.
Thank you so much.
It is such a treat. I like to get, I don't even drink coffee, but I like to get a beautiful full milk latte.
Yeah, we only do full milk
lattes. As in the foggy, it's not raining. Yeah. It's just like crisp enough. I need a sweater.
Yep.
No real breeze, but just like beautiful clouds in the sky.
It's great.
I love to come into your bookstore. You let mm-hmm. me bring that latte in there, even though I spilled all over that pile of books one time because I paid for them afterwards.
Yep. Yeah. That was very nice of you.
And just love it.
Yeah.
I just love it.
We can gift wrap if you need.
it's a
really
wonderful
charming.
Atmosphere. The other thing is that it always kind of smells like French fries, which makes sense, which I love. It's like one
that
of my favorite smells. And you can just eat nonstop French fries.
But I look great.
And you look
perfect. Thank you.
So congrats on that. Sometimes when you're in the mood, you'll close up a little early and just a small group of people will enjoy some of your amazing close-up magic.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, I really wowed them with that. Thank God. That was an 11th hour choice.
I know. And I know that that is what won Aya Cash's heart
of
over,
of course,
too.
She
so
loves
that
magic.
That was something
yeah.
very special. I don't know if you have the ability to. I know that you can take her with you to your apartment in Tahoe. The one type of house that makes the littlest sense. That beautiful apartment complex right on the lake. Fantastic.
It's very modern.
I know you can take her there. I'm not sure if you can take her into the world of Spaceballs and Blazing Saddles,
no.
but okay, great. So she's on her own. for that period of time.
That's me time.
And I don't know if, like, well, I know he's going to be really interested to hear about this. So in your one day of switching bodies with Denzel Washington, you can fill in your dear friend and mentor, Tim Duncan, and tell him all about what the
honestly,
experience
that's
was
the
like.
Greatest. That's great.
Right?
Man, my that's, life is good.
I mean, this is
good stuff.
This is great imaginary stuff going on here.
Truly.
Somehow this is all going to spill into your real life. That's what I believe I about this
so.
Match game.
I truly, genuinely, this is a weird career goal of mine, but so I, living in Texas for a brief time, became a San Antonio Spurs fan, mm-hmm. and they have a run of regional commercials for HEB,
yeah.
which is a
yeah,
grocery
yeah,
chain.
Yeah, grocery store, sure.
And they become sort of like this cult internet thing
yeah.
where it's like the players just act in these really stupid little yeah grocery store sketches, yes. basically. And my dream is to get successful enough that I can go and be like, hey, I will write and act in all of these commercials, like regional Texas first. Commercials. Just let me do it. And so I think Tim Duncan, you know,
oh, yeah.
that could happen
the specificity of that is so reachable
yes.
that I am very confident it will happen.
Thank you.
I'm very confident.
That's, yeah.
Zeke, what a pleasure and a joy.
What a treat this has been.
I'm so glad.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for
reliving
doing the
my
podcast.
High school members.
It was really
oh boy.
Where can people find you and what would you like them to know about, if anything?
You can catch me at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater every Tuesday at 11 p.m. with my wonderful team, Cardinal Redbird.
Cardinal Redbird, very, very strong, very talented team, guys.
Thank you. Additionally, the second Friday of every month with my other team, White Women.
Also a phenomenal group.
Thank you. And then, you know, you can watch Take My Wife
Take
on
my
CISO.
Wife.
With my good friend JV over here.
What a delightful show. What a delightful group of people.
It's just the best.
I already pitched you guys on subscribing to CISO because of Hidden America. I know I've brought up Take My Wife before.
Do it. Use the promo code Take
Need
My Wife for two
more.
Free months. Hot
Done.
Tip.
Hot tip. That is hot. That was some hot goss.
Yeah, that's not hot goss. That's not LA
Biz. That turned out to be 100% correct.
Yes.
All right, guys. There is one piece of business remaining that I didn't warn you about, which
Copy
is that,
that
for my Boys of Summer series,
uh-huh.
I ask my gentleman guests to sing from memory, if they can, a snippet of Don Henley's Boys of Summer. Do you think you have it in you?
I think I got something in me. Find out. We'll find out what it is.
Hear what comes to mind yeah. when I say that. Because
do you know what year
anything.
This song came out by any chance?
I want to say it was like it might be like 90 or something.
Okay, yeah.
It really has like a it, that tinny
yeah,
kind
yeah,
of
yeah.
like
real tinny,
a
real
lot of like,
synthy.
We're gonna we're gonna take
yeah.
a hit full of which is hilarious because he's a drummer.
Yeah.
So it's hilarious that he's like, I don't even need to play in this one, guys. Let's just get that fucking synth
yeah.
going.
Before I do it, can I ask who has done it the best so far?
It's real. That's tough to say because there's varying levels of what I perceive as the best.
Got
I would
it.
Say that someone who doesn't know it at all, who just has totally winged it and made
yeah.
me laugh really hard,
great.
Is one kind of the best.
Cool.
And then you have people like Paul and Storm who like recorded a little snippet for me in harmony, like
wow.
professionally, and it sounds amazing.
Got
so
it.
That's also tough to beat.
Cool.
But
well, I can tell you, I won't be on that end of the spectrum. So yeah, should I just take
Hit
it away
me. Yeah, take it.
Great. Well, we have a 45 minute intro. So there's a lot of like
that's right.
I don't know any other words in the verse leading up to the hook. Okay, I'm in Jennifer Varner's living room. It's filled with a whole bunch of books. She's sitting here with the podcast. We're having fun. It's been real fast. Only been like an hour or two. I think, I don't know, there's a dentist giant outside. I can hear you in the podcast. Janet Varney. I also do musical improv. Genuinely. So feel free to come check that out.
Oh, thank you, Zeke.
I'm going to take that home and record
so
that in
happy.
Harmony. So
great.
You're welcome.
Oh, guys. Talk to you next time on the podcast.
And As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.